Scaling the Major Donor Mountain and Avoiding the Landmines. My name is John Ogle. I serve as the Vice President of Development with the Luis Palau Association. That means I'm in charge of fundraising. So all these interesting words for fundraising, development, advancement, or some try to completely disguise what they do. We want to share things that we've learned. We want to have a discussion about issues that we're experiencing in our ministries. So I'm hoping that this is not going to be a one-way street, but this is going to be a two-way street of us talking and learning together. I am not claiming to have all the answers about working with major donors, though I've learned a few things. And there may be somebody else in the room that has helped bumped into some of these situations that we're dealing with that might offer some wisdom as well. So that's the format, kind of where I'm going to do some definitions. I'm going to walk through kind of the Luis Palau Association's experience in this area. And then we're going to talk about some things that in my 25 years with Palau, I've got six things that, as I look back, were things that really elevated our success in engaging and seeing funds come from major donors. So I'm going to walk you through all six of those things. And then I've got some landmines, just some difficult things that you may run into in working with major donors. And I want to talk about those so you're not surprised, perhaps, when you hit those. I'm hoping that's not going to be a discouragement, because there's not always great answers for some of them. And as we go, I want to make this a dialogue, and so we can kind of benefit from our collective wisdom. Let's pray before we go any further. Father, I thank you for this morning and the reminder from Pat that the gospel is really everything, and we ought to be shouting it to the masses. And I thank you for Jesus, for what he's done in our lives, and for the calling that you've put on our life to be your messenger, to proclaim the good news. And Lord, you've given us a vision, and that vision requires resources, and major donors can be a huge blessing and get blessed as they engage with us in our ministries. And so Lord, I just pray that you would keep giving us wisdom and favor as we seek to grow in this area. And we ask you, Father, we thank you that you're our provider, and we ask you to provide every penny that we need on time. And Lord, just pray that this session would leave us with some fresh ideas and some fresh encouragement and wisdom in this important part of our ministry. So we commit this time to you in Jesus' name. Amen. 90% of the Luis Palau Association's income comes from 10% of our donors. Wow. I'm going to show you a report in about 20 minutes. We're going to put the real numbers out there. I think, I looked, it was 431 people. Is that good or bad?
Maybe bad.
Maybe bad. Why would you say that?
Just because if everyone's front-loaded, if someone, let's say they're old and they pass away, then maybe the family doesn't continue to give. Whereas if you have 10,000 donors at $50 or $100, maybe it's more sustainable over time. But I'm no expert.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Does anybody think it's good? Or no, Sammy, go ahead.
It's the opposite. I'd rather to see it spread. This year I have been hit hard because we have a smaller donor base.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of our major donors either got divorced or passed away.
Yeah. Major donors get divorced. Major donors die. Okay, fewer receipts? Yeah, okay. So less administrative costs, that's true.
Less cost of bookkeeping.
Less bookkeeping, yeah.
Easier to think excellently.
Yeah, it's easier to think excellently when you have fewer gifts and they're larger. That's true. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, okay? I mean, yes, John?
But is that true with other organizations as well?
Every organization is different. So I'm going to give you kind of what we have kind of evolved to at Luis Palau Association. Personally, I believe that the healthiest organizations are those that have broad base of support with strong development programs at every level. So that would mean great programs to introduce new people to make a first gift to the ministry. Great programs to keep people that have expressed interest and given historically and their ability to give long term. Generally that's through mail, email, sometimes phone, etc. I believe organizations should have strong partner programs where people are given motivation and encouragement and strong reports to give every month to the ministry. I believe, sound development structure would also have things that would kind of encourage mid-range donors to continue on and to be informed and affirmed. And then major donors. I think this is one piece to a big puzzle on how you want to fund your ministry. However, I have seen major donors do some amazing things when they get behind your organization. The most obvious one is funding. There are initiatives that we have done at the Luis Palau Association that we started with a sort of not tiny vision, because we almost never do things that have tiny vision, but a certain size vision. And because major donors got involved in the process, it actually expanded the vision and it enabled us to do way more. I'm going to give you some examples of that. We have two prayer initiatives at the Luis Palau Association. Both of them are completely run and driven by major donors. So major donors pray, and they also volunteer, and they also advocate for your organization. So there are a lot of things that can come out of having meaningful programming and relationships with major donors. The work of raising money and engaging people to support your organization, it has to start with your own call and your own vision. And so that has to be firmed and established in your mind as we kind of begin this process. It's not, I want to raise money. What can I raise money for? That's a recipe for disaster. It starts with, what has God said to you and your organization about what is your calling, what is your vision? And then the work becomes finding those men and women where God has placed in their heart a desire to do something great for God that would overlap with your call and your vision. So understanding your call and your vision is where it starts. Secondly, the outcome of our work with major donors, you need to think about it as the net dollars for ministry. It's kind of bringing a little economic thinking to this. In other words, you're going to have to invest in order to have a strong major donor program. And that investment comes through time, energy, sweat, and just financially, it takes money to go spend time with these people. It takes money to bring those people together into groups and gatherings. And so the reality is you have to subtract from their giving the actual economic dimension of this, and it's those net dollars that you can then deploy to fulfill the ministry that God's called you to and of evangelism. So you have to think about net dollars. Three never-ending objectives that when I look in the mirror every day in my work and development, it's win new major donors, well, in this case with major donors, win major donors, keep major donors, lift major donors. And so you want to be thinking about what am I doing in all three of those categories to see that be realized.
What was the third one again?
Win, keep, and lift. They're there on your outline.
Oh.
So your mission with major donors, four different things. Get into their life, discover their dream, show them the vehicles that your organization has to fulfill their dream, and challenge them to invest now. Get into their life. You have to spend time with major donors. And I want us to be what Proverbs 25:25 says. Like cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a distant land. People's lives are filled with challenges and hassles and troubles. And when we show up, we're a messenger to say, guess what? God's at work. Lives are being impacted. The gospel's going out. People are going from death to life. So that's the message, and that's the heart, and that's how we want to be perceived. We want to be bringing a drink of cold water to people who are having really a lot of challenges in their life. And so that's kind of part of this process of getting into their life. Got to spend time with them. One of the things I like to do on an initial visit with a donor is I ask them to share their testimony with me. That's a great way to kind of get to know where these guys have come from, what their journey has been. That's one of the things I like to do. You're trying to figure out what makes them tick. What do they care about? What are their values? And then the second thing is discover their dream. I mean, a question that you could ask a major donor after you've built some rapport is there anything that they would like to do for God? Has God put anything on your heart you want to do for God? Sometimes major donors don't know what their dream is. They know they want to make a difference. They know they want to live for Jesus and they want to make an eternal impact. So sometimes your vision is the spark that they need to get a dream for their life. This is why it seems so kind of strange, because we think, well, wow, they're the major donors and they have all the money. Like, they don't need us. Like, we're just trying to kind of connect so we can get their cash. No, they need us. We're the vehicle through which they can have an eternal impact and fulfillment. There are many things that our relationship with them bring. I mean, I can think of a very, very wealthy family that actually hosts a gathering for us once a year with, and they allow us to invite people to a kind of a resort that they have a interest in financially. And the woman basically just says, this is like the highlight of my year, is this chance to just be with the Palau leadership and, you know, a group of other people, because this is why we work all year. We work all year and then we seed into this ministry. And so when we get a chance to hear the fruit and to be with those that we're supporting, this is the highlight of our year. There may be donors, I'm sure there are donors to the Luis Palau Association ministry that care as much or more than I do about the organization, and I've worked there for 25 years. This is not small. The heart connections that we're making with major donors is profound in their life. And then show them your vehicles, explain your vision, show them your projects, and then invite them to stand with you financially and to do that now. That's your mission with major donors. I want to talk a little bit about the Luis Palau Association experience. And one of the things that I think is one of the healthiest things. Sorry, yeah, I'm not going to be going through my outline on the screen. I'm just using it for like a few little things I'm going to share during our time. So, got to stay with me. Page 2. LPA experience. I've been at the Palau Association. I'm in my 26th year in fundraising. That is unusual. Probably the biggest factor on that, Luis and Pat's missionary beginnings. Luis and Pat Palau raised personal support as missionaries. And Luis was from Argentina. So there was zero, like, family, you know, like, connection. There's no home church. Pat Palau was a believer from, as you heard this morning, Cedar Mill Bible Church on the west side of Portland. So there were some connections there. But they basically made one-on-one donor calls. They went to missions conferences and the little missionary dessert receptions in people's basements, where they would present their vision and their ministry, and then they would get to know people, and they would go back out in the car and they would compare notes, and they would say, hey, I met this guy. He's an engineer, you know, works for Texas Instruments. And I met this other couple, and they would write their names down, and then they would just start communicating with these people over time. But raising missionary support is really no different than raising major gift support. It's really the same principles. It takes time. It's not big, easy, fast money. It's slow, it's incremental, but it can bear fruit eventually. So we had missionary beginnings. We've invested time. Luis was telling me a couple days ago, and I got to research this now that he mentioned it. There's a woman in Palo Alto, California that has been giving monthly to Luis and Pat since 1960. That's 59 years of donor continuity. A lot of the church, when Luis came to the United States, he came to Palo Alto. Palo Alto in 1960 is different than Palo Alto today, but there were a lot of just families, young families that he got to know that, you know, started working for some of these technology companies that, you know, were kind of being birthed in the Silicon Valley. And as those people grew in their, you know, financial ability and kind of grew his families, and then the kids were done with college, and the funding grew. So it took time. I remember I don't know why we're getting all these tech engineer types, but engineers can be very, very good people to get to know. I would just say they tend to make good, serious, you know, stable living. And we have a lot of people that work for high-tech companies that support the Luis Palau Association. One guy was an Intel engineer. He was very involved at his church, Village Baptist Church, on the west side of Portland. I don't know if Luis maybe spoke at his church. He started giving $25 a month. And he might have like increased it to $35 a month after 10 years. Just kept going. And then we finally got a vision and an invitation to do a festival in Portland, Oregon in 1999. And we had a little fundraising get together, and we put the vision of doing something big to lift up Jesus in Portland, and he gave $10,000. And he liked what he heard, and we ended up coming back and doing one the second year, and he gave $15,000, and he's given basically that amount of money ever since. So, little acorns, over time, can produce big oak trees. So, time, okay? Missionary, you know, fundraising is just one-on-one, building relationships, and then communicating consistently for the long haul. And time were a couple of the elements that we've seen at Palau. The next one is the 90-10 principle, and I've already mentioned the scale of what we're doing at Palau. I'm going to put this on the screen. And I knew after I looked at this on my computer that you weren't going to be able to read it very well. So I'm going to give it to you. You don't even need to take a picture. Take one and pass it back. But this is probably one of my absolute favorite development reports. And I will explain it to you. I got this report from a close friend of mine, Bill McConkie, who has this whole development management system. I see Jordan back there, who also knows Bill. But the first column says the total dollars given. So that's the amount. Yeah, this was our 2018. This is the whole ministry of LPA. I made about 20 of these, so I hope that covers. I was expecting fewer people the second day. And so that's the amount that came from that line, the range of annual giving. So we had $25 given from people that gave less than $5, and we had 11 of those people. 10 of them gave it in one gift. Someone took two gifts to give less than $5. Okay, just so making sure you understand what's happening here, all right? And then you kind of work your way down the page. So let's go to line 14, the line number kind of didn't copy there, but it's actually line 14. 11,114,221, 81.72% of our total giving of 3.6 million, or 13.6 million, came in gifts of $10,000 or more. That was 272 people. So 6.44% of our donors gave 81.72% of our giving. And if you go to the next line up, the 5,000 to 9,999.99, that's another 159 people that gave $909,000 to the ministry. You add those two numbers up for the percentage of donors, it's just slightly over 10%. And you add 81.72 plus 6.68, that's 87.5% of our giving came from 10% of our donors. So this is how it paints that picture. Again, like, is this good? I don't know, but this is what we're dealing with at LPA. The 90-10 principle for us, and it would be an interesting exercise for you to take your organization, no matter how big or small, and you don't necessarily need to do the annual frequency of giving, though we use that to kind of help us plan sort of our partner program and how many people have an intention to give 12 times or more a year. It's actually people that we think have a frequency of 9 plus are probably people that want to give 12 times a year. And so we want to try to push that out.
John, do you have the percentage or breakdown of how many people give online through a credit card versus write a check and mail it in?
It's less than 10%.
Of writing checks?
90% write checks.
90% write checks?
Yeah.
Wow.
For us.
So what do you think your average age donor is if they're writing checks?
Palau is actually slightly younger than some missionary, most missionary organizations, but I would say it's definitely in the 50s. Yeah. Be our average donor would be for sure in their 50 to 60. And we don't have ages on that many of our donors, so but we look at that from time to time. So what does this mean? Like, well, you know, give me some fundraising consulting here. What should we be doing?
I would imagine Billy Graham is similar to you.
Nope.
He's not.
Very different.
I mean, he was connected to wealthy people. Billy Graham made big donations.
Billy Graham is more of a media ministry. Media ministries have lots and lots and lots and lots of small donors. Yeah.
He didn't have a regular TV program.
Yeah, well, he did. His crusades were on regularly for, I don't know, 2 decades probably. So he acquired a lot of donors through, and actually Billy Graham today probably has a pretty robust major donor program. But back in the day, it was a lot of mass donors. In fact, so this is where I'm, you know, like, I'm giving you like a full picture here, but like, one of the top Billy Graham guys, or might have even been Mr. Graham himself, said to Luis one time, don't get beholden to major donors. So that was Mr. Graham's like advice to, you know, now I guess Luis violated that, or maybe because he hired me, I violated it in his, you know, shoes or something. But Billy Graham was more broad-based. But here's what you're supposed to tell me. You better spend a lot of time with those 431 people. Because every one of them is valuable. I mean, they're all valuable, but time is limited. And so what we've chosen to do is, like, we're going to have very deep relationships with these people that God has put on their heart to give consequential gifts to LPA. So that's how we do it, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that. The way we do it is we go spend time with people. In fact, our goal would be, our focus is more on the on this deep kind of connecting, would be for the people that have given at least $10,000 or more to LPA, we will try to go visit those people 4 times a year.
Is that you visiting or Luis visiting?
No, it's not Luis. Yeah. And this is it. You know, we have a team, and I'm gonna talk to you about that for a moment. But we have people on the Palau Association staff that work in my department, and me, and Kevin Palau, and other Palau leadership. But we try to visit with these people 4 times a year.
And how much was the dollar amount?
We focus that on people that have given at least $10,000 to LPA. And you may not have a lot of those. So you're going to have to kind of adjust this scale of this. And I pray that this is not kind of like blowing you away and saying, well, we could never do this, so you've just like checked out. Please don't check out, okay? You know, but just think about this. If you took your, you know, list and just ranked it, who are the top 30 people that are supporting your ministry? Can you go spend time with those people? Start with those people that God's already raised up in your organization. But we feel like if you only go visit these people once a year, in the pace of the world that we live in right now, it's like we're lucky if they remember our name. Yeah. It's just busy. And it's very hard to lift people's vision when you're only connecting with them once a year.
They could live all over the country.
Yeah, let me show you. So this is a map, a colorful map of the United States. And so you can see, you can't take a picture of that because I'm not giving you that just because I don't know how helpful it really is. But these are the people that work in my development field team. So I have kind of the middle cut, Missouri and Kansas. I don't go to Colorado very often. Michigan and up in the Northeast. Keith Palau, which is kind of the mustard color, Texas, Oklahoma, Illinois, Northern California. We have a rep that lives in the Twin Cities, and so he does sort of the Midwestern, and then we've you'll notice this is kind of like not very consistent, right? It's just sort of weird, like, why would I do Michigan and then Missouri? A lot of it is just like we just kind of go with where sometimes there's natural connections. My wife's from Springfield, Missouri, and so I have some connections there. And we had a Luis Palau crusade in Kansas City in 1997. And so I just started following up with those Kansas City area donors, and I've just kept it over these years. Not, you know, I've not given that off to a field rep. Same thing with Michigan. We had a Luis Palau crusade in Michigan in 94. I don't have any family that lives there, but I had a lot of pre-existing relationships in Michigan with the ministry I worked with previously. And the first year I started at Palau, we had a crusade in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so I've just stayed. So I know I've been calling on some of these same donors for 25 years. And that's another thing I would say about this work, is it gets easier the longer you do it. Is it hard to get an appointment with a friend? No. We're making friends. I mean, it's not that complicated. We're making friends. So a lot of we've had festivals in Little Rock, Arkansas, Nashville, Tennessee. So that's why Chip got those two, you know. He had sort of some capacity, and so it's like, hey, you take Nashville. And so he, you know, every time we have a dimension of Palau that has been really significant to grow our major donor program, and that is the invitations that we get to do ministry in the United States. And there is a local fundraising effort that goes on. We're doing a campaign right now in about 2 weeks in Tyler, Texas. And so some leaders stepped forward and they're raising, I think, $700,000 to do the Luis Palau Festival in Tyler in about 10 days. And the strategy there is like build a local committee, and they start talking to their friends and they give gifts to kind of lead the way. We might do a few fundraising events, and that's how we get to those 700, those people that give that money. And then we hope and pray that we do a good job relationally and that many of those people are going to want to stay connected with Palau. What do you think would be a good percentage of people that would stay with LPA that gave to a local festival? Has anybody tried to do this type thing? 5%? 5%.
I'd hope for 30% to 40%.
30% to 40%. Anybody else? Someone want to split the difference? The price is right. You know, if you go over, you've blown it. If we could do, like, with all donors, including, like, mass donors, if we're doing, like, 10 to 15%, we're, like, high-fiving. With major donors, it can be better because it's more personal. But that's why we have these crazy territories. And so each representative has a list of about 60 people, families, that have hopefully given at that $10,000 or more level. And then there would be another 20 to 30 families that we think would be have high potential to maybe get to that point. Again, you might need to scale that down. It might be 5,000 for you. It might be 1,000 for you. Okay, just scale it to your situation. And so we go try to see these 60 people plus the high perspective people every quarter. Yes?
What does a visit look like?
What does a visit look like? It can look like a lot of things. The first visit is generally a time to just do something to get to know the donor. There is no ask involved. It's just finding out what makes them tick, sharing testimony. If it's an initial introduction, you know, that first visit, there's only one goal, and that is to have the or kind of earn the right to go back and call on them a second time. Just to make a friend and to have enough level of interest that they're going to want to see you when you come back into their area, or if they're a local donor, like in maybe the next 90 days or so. So the first call is what we call kind of a friendly visit. The second call in the course of the year might be what we would call a vision visit. And on that visit, we're starting to paint, at now that we're getting to know them a little bit, we're going to start to feature something that's coming up that we think would be aligned with their heart and what God's put in their heart for them to do. So if, you know, we're contextualizing the ministry and saying, hey, we're going to be going to Berlin, Germany next May. And you told me that you, you know, have some family in Germany, and we're very excited about that. And the next time I come in, I'd like to bring some detailed information and share with you kind of some ways that you can get involved in Berlin. How would that be? You're testing a little bit, testing the waters, presenting vision. The third visit would be then you'd bring the information and you would invite them to consider a gift to get behind what God's doing in Berlin. If they say yes, Lord willing, they do, Then the final visit in the year, and those are fun ones if it went well, is you report back. So there's a kind of a schematic for what the four visits would look like. A friendly visit, and that, you know, that you're not limited to this sequence, but I'm saying kind of like in the textbook sort of thing. We just had our reps in Monday and Tuesday this week, and we talked a lot about this. We actually have just started kind of plotting. We take the list of the families that they've been assigned, okay, down one edge of the page, and then first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and we're putting in the box, okay, did we get a visit done, and what kind of visit was it? So we're trying to move people in relationships. So our visits have intention, but there's a zillion things that we can do with our donors. And your presence in their life is huge. Even if you don't ask, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but even if you don't ask, your presence is powerful. Sometimes your presence is enough to cause people to give. I mean, I definitely have had that happen many times. I go visit and then all of a sudden a gift comes. I didn't even ask for a gift. I just went and spent time with people. So, personal visits, we try to do four a year. And then the other thing, one of the things I didn't really do very well was someone wanted me to define a major donor, but it's people that have ideally these three characteristics. Number one, an affinity for what you're called to do, okay? They share your heart for evangelism, okay? Number one, affinity. Number two, capacity. Harder to know for sure, but you're trying to connect with people that would have the ability to give a consequential gift for your organization. For Palau, you know, and we're kind of focusing on this, we're looking at people that could give $5,000 to $10,000 a year. You know, if properly motivated and inspired, that's a pretty, there's a lot of people these days that could give $5,000. Don't think that, oh man, I don't know anybody with money. I don't know anybody that could do that. No, a lot of people could give $5,000 to $10,000 to your ministry if properly motivated. So affinity, capacity, and then the third thing would be generosity. They understand biblical generosity and stewardship. It's a home run if you can find somebody with all three of those characteristics. Our actual like relationship and ministry into the lives of people can influence two of the three of those things. What two of the three can we influence? What's that?
Share a heart for evangelism.
Yeah, the affinity. Yep. Generosity. Yep. We can help inspire. Sometimes they don't have an affinity for what we do because they don't know. They don't even know what it is. They've never been around an evangelist. They've never seen evangelism, you know, like at Palau, like big crowds. Wow, lots of people coming to Jesus in one shot. That's very inspiring. I didn't know that existed. That's cool. I can suddenly have an affinity for that. So sometimes our sharing our ministry with people can actually give them an affinity for it. Okay? If they know Jesus, they don't know Jesus. You know, people give to people justified by the cause, but if they can't really relate to the cause, that's not where you need to be spending your time. You need to be spending your time with people that know Jesus, love Jesus, and ideally in our context, want to share the good news of Jesus with somebody else. And then generosity. We can actually be used in their life to inspire generosity. We can tell stories of people who have been generous to God's work. I love the book, The Treasure Principle by Randy Alcorn. If you've never read that book, it's like, Even someone that doesn't like to read can read this book. It's one of those little square ones, you know, that's a very simple read. Great biblical teaching on generosity and stewardship. I've shared that with people, and it's impacted folks. And then the final thing under the LPA experience would be gatherings of donors. And we try to get donors together. Back, way back before my time with Palau, LPA used to do almost like week-long Bible conferences where Luis would do Bible teaching for like 5 days. And people would pay money and attend these things. And Luis would minister from the Word into their lives. And then throughout the time, we'd share updates and vision and invite people to give. We shifted to what we now call President's Councils, and we're wrestling with maybe even reframing that whole thing right now. But we moved to a model where we go shorter. Ours are only Friday night through Sunday at a destination that would be appealing to donors. So it, like places that are near beaches is usually good. And here's the scary part. We pay for it. And they have to get themselves there. And we put them in a hotel and we feed them. And we do the same thing we used to do over 5 days. We just condense it over 2 days. We minister from the Word. We have a great worship. We report back on the fruitfulness of what has happened over the last year. And then we put an inspiring vision in front of them for the future and invite them to make 3-year financial commitments. That's a very core piece of like the LPA experience. We've been doing those since 1998, and we have done over 70 of them. Trying to give you some context about how do you get 441 people giving $5,000 or more. It does take a lot of time. Question up front.
What is the time frame that you send out the invitation in advance to be able to get those people? How far in advance do you send an invite?
If I was only going to do one a year, I would probably send the invite out, the first invite out, maybe 9 months ahead of time. We do 3 a year, and so they tend to be spaced like about 4 months apart. And so we'll give our people that have already have a history of doing this, like the schedule for the year, but then we'll send the invitation for the next one maybe about, you know, 3 weeks before the next one's going to happen. So we're sort of like in a sequence on that. But gathering your major donors, that's been LPA's experience. Those are the things that we do. And then elevators and escalators. I'm trying to link back to my Scaling the Mountain title here. How do you scale the mountain? Well, if you can get on some escalators and elevators, that really helps. And one of the things I would say is an inspiring vision. And back in 2006, the festivals have been going at that point for about 6 or 7 years. We spent some time and we just kind of looked at where LPA was headed, like kind of the trajectory of the ministry, and we packaged it into what we called the Legacy Campaign. And it included media, which was probably the major like force to touch people, and it had some real scale and some vision to it. And we had a festival on the mall in Washington, D.C., and we had a ton of families that came to join us there. And we decided we were going to present this Legacy Campaign vision at that conference. And we picked some of our most capable people to just get together the first night, kind of for dessert after the first session with Luis and Pat. And all we did was we just kind of laid out the vision verbally to people. Probably took like 5 minutes. And God's spirit moved. And there was a guy on the Luis Palau board at that time who came to me and said, if we could get maybe another 5 to 10 people to do the same thing, I'd give $1 million to that. Whoa. And another major donor family was just going down the hall. And so I chased them down and I said, hey, this guy just said he'd give $1 million if we could get some other people that might do the same. And they didn't have to think very long and they said, yeah, we'll do it too. And then there was a third guy that was in the room. And he was a very, personality-wise, was just kind of almost, you know, just a real instigator and very wealthy, a real estate development type guy. And so we shared, you know, hey, these two families have said they would do this. And he was in. And then there was another family that was at the weekend that had a charitable foundation. But the majority of the family was all at the weekend, and this was now, we're going to present the overall vision to the conference maybe a day after this, you know, or a day has gone by now, and I'm getting ready to go do it. And this guy takes me with him to a table, and he says to this family, he's like, hey, we're these other two guys, and we're all doing this $1 million thing. You guys need to do $1 million. And they said, well, we have to have a board meeting to kind of approve that. He said, no, you don't. And they were in. The Lord had, through His Spirit, inspired these four families to commit $1 million each. And for whatever reason, this guy had in his mind that we needed $5 million before we got up and challenged the rest of the people to do it. And so I'll never forget, you know, I was in the back of the meeting room, like the meeting might have even been started. And there, the guy that had the original vision and this instigator guy are standing there, and I'm facing them like it's against one of these air wall kinds of things. And the instigator guy says, if you and I each go up 50%, they'll have $5 million. And the guy did it. We had $5 million in about 36 hours. And that guy that made the initial kind of like challenge, we had a board meeting like the next couple days. And I just said, wow, thank you, you know. And he said, I'll never forget it. It was the vision. It was that vision. So that's the word to you. An inspiring vision can, and the Spirit of God, we did not orchestrate that. We brought the people together, and these were people that could do it, and we shared it simply. But it was the vision. That was, in my whole like fundraising life, the most combustible sort of moment I've ever seen. And the challenge then became, just to kind of play the whole thing out, they then challenged those four donors that gave $5 million, committed $5 million, asked us to go find another five people that would match them. 10. And then we were to take that 10 and challenge kind of the lower levels of our donor base. And within like 6 months, we had another $5 million.
John, what was the vision specifically? What was it?
10 years, festivals, media, Next Generation Alliance, the multiplying effect of that. It was just the Palau ministry. Yeah. That's what was so like cool about it. It wasn't like, oh wow, let's start doing something new.
Right.
it was really just kind of seeing the path that we were headed on over the next 10 years and then packaging it in a way that could be visionary for people. So it wasn't like, oh wow, let's like kind of create something that we're not doing. It was thinking about what we're doing and how do we communicate it in a way that inspires. So inspiring vision, that was one of the big elevators for us and very, very meaningful. The second thing, tangible projects. Here's what I mean by tangible projects. I mean, when I started at LPA, we'd go to noon.
11:45.
Okay, wow. All right. When I started at Palau, I showed up and they had just found a building that they wanted to buy. We had been in sort of a weird configuration of office spaces. Capital campaigns can be something that God could use to really lift people's sights. You can get you know, people that might give general funds to your ministry. They loved the idea of the building. We began to ask, and it kind of rose the tide a little bit. Another like inspiring project was we did a festival back in 2015 in New York City. New York City has a lot of power, just the whole thought of it. It's a global city. That was a place where we originally thought, wow, you know, the biggest city we've ever raised money for was probably like Houston, and I think it was about $3 million. So let's believe God for $5 million to do New York City.
Where was your epicenter for that festival in New York City?
The finish of it was the final week we had Radio City Music Hall, Times Square, and Central Park.
Wow.
But those weren't all part of the picture when we started this thing. And this was the project I was referring to earlier, where we got some major donors together in New York City to talk about this. And they basically said, you guys are thinking too small. You guys don't understand how much it's going to cost to do New York. And we said, okay, what does that mean? They started giving more. They helped raise the bar. They rose our sights for what we could believe God for and do. And in the end, it was $12 million. And God provided every penny of it. So tangible projects that you can work on and inspiring projects. Number three, hiring development staff. And getting, you know, when I started, I had 11 years of fundraising experience when I went to work for the Luis Palau Association. That was the first time LPI had ever hired anybody with any real track record in fundraising. But to go places in development and with major donors, you cannot, there's only so much that one person can do if you're kind of a one-man band situation. So carefully, prayerfully, hiring development staff is a critical part of success in this. Major donor weekends. I mentioned the transition that we made from the week-long Bible teaching, what we called Friends Conferences, to these President's Councils. When we did the first one, Luis was scared to death because they cost a lot of money. And I remember we had a little board meeting like the morning of this thing, and Luis just basically kind of stuck his finger in all the board members' faces and said, if this doesn't work, you guys are all ponying up the money to cover the cost of this thing. You know, it was very kind of like, okay, you know. couple of our board members had seen these before, you know, through Walk Through the Bible Ministries, and I give Bob Westfall credit. He was the guy that kind of taught us how to do it way back in the 90s. And we probably had 35 families that attended, and it started on a Thursday night and went through a Sunday morning, and over $2 million was committed to LPA that weekend. And that was back, probably our annual budget that back then might have been about $5 million. So that was another one of those elevator moments where it kind of lifted the overall thrust of the organization, and we realized, wow, God, you just did something amazing, and we're gonna keep going with this, and we have. And then the final thing would be peers challenging peers. That's kind of what happened at that description I gave you in DC. You remember that one like real estate development guy, like he got all inspired, and that was sort of like his calling and gifting was to like inspire others. That group that kind of really led the way on that legacy campaign, we gave it a name, we call it the Legacy Group, and they get together once a year. And when it comes time to talk about involvement with the ministry financially, something really weird happens. They asked the staff to leave. I don't know about you, but like I, in my skin, you know, as the development guy, that's like really weird. No, they asked the staff to like leave. And then they have a conversation among themselves about, now, you know, the guys that sort of lead the way on that are close friends of ours, and so, you know, we've talked to them about like what our goals are and stuff, but they talk to each other about it. Also, like when we did, we've gone back and done multiple campaigns in Portland, Oregon, and some of the leadership on those campaigns have gotten to know each other, and so they will kind of challenge each other to lead the way financially on projects. Peers challenging peers. It can be powerful. It definitely needs to be Holy Spirit led. Landmines. Okay, 15 minutes of landmines. Let's go here. Here are some of the difficult things. I was talking to somebody today about this. One giant sugar daddy donor. Has anybody been there and done that? That has challenges. There's a vulnerability there to you as a ministry. And so sometimes it is what it is, but I was just talking to someone whose big giant sugar daddy donor gave them 3 months notice. And, you know, they retired, basically, and they were giving off of their income. And so they've had to reshape, and the Lord has done it. But that can be a landmine. Another, just as this is a landmine and this is a lifelong challenge, did you know that donors have expectations? Every donor has expectations. And really, one of our biggest jobs is to try to figure out what they are, and if it's in our power to do so, to exceed those expectations. But I have had many cases where I have violated donors' expectations, and I have lost donors. I can remember a guy that came to that port or that Washington, D.C. President's Council, and I mentioned it was big. I think we had like maybe over 130 families that were there. And our normal one of these weekends would be maybe with about 40 families. And we didn't treat him the way that we used to treat him. And he didn't like what he heard or something, and psh, gone. We tried hard to get them back, but gone. Donor expectations are huge. Unfulfilled pledges. Has anybody ever had unfulfilled pledges? I got more hands on that one. All right. A lot of prayer. Don't let it be because you haven't said thank you enough and haven't reported back enough. I had somebody in that season when we, I think might have been the very first gathering we had of that legacy group that we didn't know that well. We'd gotten to know in a festival city. He came, he committed $1 million. He gave $1 million. And we didn't treat him very well. He never gave again. So, donor expectations.
What do you mean by you didn't treat him very well?
We didn't spend enough time with him. We just didn't spend enough time with him. And I think it was...
We don't want to become a brown noser or
they're giving $1 million.
No, yeah. he's expressed a serious interest in our organization. And so... we didn't do the 4 visits a year. We did like 0 visits a year and mailed him stuff. And at the end, he didn't get back what he thought he should have been getting back from LPA. And, you know, this is the thing about donors is when they're unhappy, they generally won't tell you. They'll just disappear. And so, understanding donor expectations, and it's a lifelong process of learning and growing in that, and same thing with unfulfilled pledges. Out of sight, out of mind is the one, that's really the illustration I had with this guy, you know. Hey, stay in front of your donors, because if you're not in front of your donors, there's other stuff that is in front of your donors, so do it.
So John, with communicating to those donors, what have you guys found? Is it different for each one? It probably is, versus like, mailing or calls or face-to-face or emails, because I try to do some of all those things. And
yep.
Then someone says, yeah, how did your last Spain mission trips go? And I was like, didn't you read like, 4 levels of communication?
No, they didn't.
They don't?
Yeah, that's right.
They don't?
So it is, it's on us to kind of understand the styles of our donors. And when we're talking about people that are giving at this level, consequential level, we got to figure that out, and then we got to deliver the goods. It's hard.
You're still in photo mode. They still saw the name. They don't read the details or maybe don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't send it.
Right.
No, the answer is not don't send it.
Right.
Send it, but this is where, you know, and you could even have a conversation with that donor and say, hey, how would you like to hear updates from us? You know, is there a preferred media that you like to use? Some people like texting, and some people like email, and some people like to mail things and stuff. The one thing about asking that question, though, is what people say and what they actually do sometimes is different. So, you know, like, well, like here's a real one. It's like, you don't need to say thank you. Have you ever had any donor said tell you that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't listen to that. You know, I just, that one goes in one ear and out the other. I mean, I hear it, and I might do it in a less, you know, kind of a automatic way or something, but I don't, there's certain things like where I don't. They might tell me one thing, and I'm going to hear that, and I'm going to adapt to it, but I'm not going to completely dismiss something. Saying yes just to get the money. Landmine. There might be times when a major donor would come to you and ask you to do something that is not in your skill set. Or it's not in your heart, or it's not just, it just doesn't fit. And there is a huge temptation to say yes just to get the money. And we've done that at times at Palau. Most times, in the end, people are disappointed because we said yes and we said we'd do it and we tried to do it, but it's not our strength and it's not at the heart of what we do. And so we tried to kind of accommodate, but it doesn't. So I'm just, and this is like an area where you can actually get off, you can, you know, that whole sense of mission drift, that can, that's real, and that can get you off your calling. So pray about that when someone, you know, wants to, and give to get. I've had people like propose all these different things. I got one, I got a call back this week that I think is one of these give to get things. And it's like, we'd like to give to your organization. Okay, then go ahead. Here's my, you know, here's our address, send it in. But then it's like, oh no, well, you need to kind of participate in our program, or I want somehow like access to your donors. I want to come speak at your major donor weekend. I've had that one. So landmines, you know, there's landmines. Final keys to long-term success with major donors, and then I'm going to open the microphone for other challenging issues. I would love to hear what you're facing. Prayer. God's our provider. We need to ask the Holy Spirit for wisdom and breakthroughs. He can do it. This stuff that I described, some of these big explosive moments, I mean, we had done some things, but we had no expectation that God was going to go in certain directions. That's the Spirit of God at work, and we need to pray that He'll do that for us, and we need to ask for His wisdom. We need to ask for His sensitivity when we're in the life of a major donor to know the right time, the right project, the right ask, the right amount, the right person, maybe to get involved with us. I can remember we were doing a festival in Tucson, Arizona. And there was a car dealer there that was very well known in the community and I think a believer. We just couldn't get to him. And finally, we added a guy to our team there on the committee who was an orthopedic surgeon. His name was Harold Willingham. And he knew this guy. I'll say the name, Jim Click. Does anybody know Jim Click Motors in Tucson? His name's like on cars all over the place. And because Harold called, we got the appointment. And so we went to Jim Click's office and we laid out the vision of the Tucson Festival. It's Tucson. And we asked him for a consequential commitment to the campaign. And he said, you know, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it for two reasons. Number one, I like it. And number two, Harold Willingham. Right person. So let's ask God for wisdom on even getting the right people around us to go with us to build bridges to major donors. And it's all about relationships, and it's about time, and it's about investing over the long haul. And there was something that Pat, the illustration that Pat had made me laugh this morning when she was talking about Luis and the boys and somebody else from his team back in Colombia went to a velodrome and they saw the Harlem Globetrotters, and all they could think about was like, how many people could we put in here for a crusade? Okay? That's evangelist eyes, right? I'm going to throw out a parallel. Development eyes. You're looking at your world as you go through it, and you're looking for people that God might bring into your life and experience that might have an affinity and a capacity and a generosity that could stand with you. And so let's ask God for relational wisdom and development eyes. And then finally, faithfulness. You know, just staying with this over time. 59 years, Louise and Pat have been doing this. You don't get to a level that we're at overnight. And God honors faithfulness. And so spending time with your major donors and sharing vision and a challenge to involvement in the power of the Holy Spirit is what success looks like. We've got no time left. If you've got landmines or issues that you'd like to talk about, come see me, and thanks for being here.